This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, December 5th, the Home Alone edition. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's six, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Dan Kois. I'm a writer and editor at Slate and the author of How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 14, and Harper, who's 12, and we live in Arlington, Virginia.
And I'm Catherine Goldstein. I am the creator and host of the Double Shift podcast, which is a show about a new generation of working mothers. And I live in Durham, North Carolina. I am the mom to Asher, who is almost 4.5, and I'm expecting twins in February.
Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine, and congratulations on the two new babies on the way.
Thank you very much.
The third new baby, if you count the new season of the Double Shift, which is extremely good.
Yes. Do twins run in your family?
Twins do not run in my family. I like to call it the plot twist of a lifetime here at our home in Durham, North Carolina. But I will definitely be talking a little bit more about my new role and identity as a twin mom in our triumphs and fails and in our Slate Plus segment. So you're going to get some good twin talk from me.
I cannot wait.
Cannot wait to hear that. Okay, so today on the show, we've got a question about surviving family visits, which is very appropriate during the holiday season. So our second question actually comes from our Facebook group this week. We got a neighbor who is concerned about the safety of the kids next door. We want to know, guys, is it okay to leave the kids in charge when you and your partner decide to go, let's say, to Aruba? We'll also be doing triumphs and fails and recommendations, as we always do. So let's start with triumphs and fails. Dan, are you winning or losing at parenting this week?
I have a triumph to share this week, but I must confess, to begin with, that it is not my triumph. I'm co-opting my wife's triumph this week because I'm so impressed by her genius and this idea she came up with. I want to share it with everyone. So this Thanksgiving at our house, we hosted a bunch of folks. We had our kids, as always, but we also had my mom, Alia's mom, and my brother. So we sort of had an interesting mix of people. You know, one problem with a group like that, as I think many people have, you're not always necessarily worried that people are going to like erupt into arguments at the dinner table, but you do want to keep the kids engaged in a conversation at the dinner table if they're old enough that they could contribute, right? You want them to not be bored and to not be rude to your guests. You want them to participate. And it's nice on Thanksgiving to sort of keep the conversation, if possible, revolving around the actual reason for the holiday. So Ali wanted to figure out some activity we could do at the dinner table, some conversation we could do that would keep the kids engaged and that would focus on thankfulness. So she had this genius idea, which is what I have been thinking of as the thanks box. She took a shoebox and she made Lyra decorate it on Thanksgiving morning once she had run out of screen time. So Lyra like made cards with funny Thanksgiving-y things on them and taped them all over it. And then she gave everyone index cards and made everyone, all seven of us, write down on the index cards, not things that you're thankful for, but categories. Oh. Categories of things you could be thankful for. So what you ended up writing on the card was a blank you're thankful for, like a friend you're thankful for, or a fictional character you're thankful for, or something triangular that you're thankful for. And then during Thanksgiving dinner, once everyone had gotten their plates and we sat down at the table and we'd said grace and everything, we would each pull out a card and you'd read it. And then we would go around the table with everyone saying, like, an article of clothing that you're thankful for. And it was really great. It was fun. I learned a lot about my mom and my brother and my mother-in-law, and the kids were not, like, horribly bored. And I just liked this idea as, like, a continuing tradition, this thanks box that we would do every year. We actually, as the weekend went on, every time we would end up at the table eating leftover Ritos, our standard Thanksgiving leftover preparation, we would bring the box back out, and we would take out a few more cards and say a few more things we were thankful for. So it's like a really simple idea that I think Ollie was very worried everyone would scoff at, but people bought into it, and it was great. I loved it. Great job, Alia. Great triumph me for marrying her.
That is a, yes, great triumph to you for not only marrying her, but sustaining the marriage. How long?
21 years, baby.
Wow.
That is very impressive. Somebody who could come up with an idea like that, that for 21 years you've managed to keep her happy, is very impressive. So
thank you.
This is your triumph. This is your triumph.
I mean, it's obviously the actual triumph of my entire life. Yes, I can't do that every week.
Very good, Dan. What about you, Catherine? Do you have a triumph or a fail? There's no such thing as failing while you're carrying twins. Everything you do is okay.
All right. Okay, I do have a triumph. As, you know, so Dan sometimes says, like, a failure is just paving the way for a future triumph. This is probably a triumph.
Oh, yeah.
Triumph paving the way for a future failure. But oh, I'm no. definitely, I'm just going to call it a triumph right now. So one thing that I had been really worried about was telling our son, who's four, about the coming twins. And I really obsessed about it. And I don't usually super overthink various, like, parenting tactics and strategies, but I was really worried about this. He's one of those kids that, you know, some little kids really love babies and are really interested in babies. He is not one of those. Like, we'd be like, look at the cute baby. Oh. He's like, that baby doesn't know how to cover its mouth when it coughs. And it's like, he just, like, did not care about babies.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Didn't care about babies. He never expressed an interest in being a big brother or having siblings. And, you know, telling kids this news is just, it's very developmental at different stages. Like, how a two-year-old's going to react is going to be different than a four-year-old, than a six-year-old, all that stuff. So I was just really, like, stressed about it, and I kept putting it off and kept putting it off, and I was like, let's get him settled at his new school, and then we'll tell him. And then I'm like, let's get this genetic test back, and then we'll tell him. And because I'm pregnant with twins, like, it was pretty obvious I was pregnant, like, earlier than definitely I was with my first pregnancy. So it's like, by, you know, 12 weeks, most people could tell that I was pregnant. By 16 weeks, it was, like, extremely obvious. And so, like, there was one point where we were, like, out at a picnic, and someone's like, oh, it looks like Asher's going to be a big bruv. And I'm like, shh. Like, we hadn't told him.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm
just
like, I'm like making, like, signs, like, please be quiet. And so I was like, okay, we have to do this. We have to just tell him. And I was just so worried. And so one day at dinner, you know, we were all having dinner together, and we said, Asher, you know, we think that you have really become such a big boy, and we think it's time for you to become a big brother. And he kind of was, like, a little bit puzzled, and then we're like, and we're having two more babies. And it was really interesting. It was kind of like a light went off in his mind, and he was like, realized, like, it was like you could sort of watch the wheels processing in his mind and, like, how all these things were lurking around. So one really interesting thing was that most people, when we tell them that we're having twins, the biggest reaction is not that we're having another child or that I'm pregnant. It's that we're having twins, because that's, like, the more unusual thing. So for him, the twins was, like, no big deal. Like, who cares? Like, one baby, two babies. Like, no difference in his mind about that at all. And then he kind of was, like, thinking about it. And he was like, and, you know, another thing is, of course, is, like, with four-year-old, like, delayed gratification and, like, telling them things in the future, they're not always so great about processing that. So we said, like, we're going to be having two babies after Christmas. And so he kind of thought about this, and he was like, and then his first comment was, if they're coming after Christmas, that means they're going to miss Christmas and they're going to miss Santa. So we have to be sure we get them presents so they're not left out. Mm-hmm. And, I was just so like, sweet. My heart like broke open and melted on the floor. Cause that was like his first thought was like already like, okay, well, we have to sort of like look out for these babies because they're going to miss Santa. And so from there, it's been really interesting. He's become really excited about the babies. He's actually gotten a lot more interested in other babies. Like, he's now like, okay, babies, this is something I need to know about. And so when we see other babies, he's like trying to interact with them and learn about them. He asks a lot of questions. So I think it coincides with like some developmental abilities of him sort of being more empathetic and like, but it feels like it actually has like triggered like a new level of maturity in him, and he's like very excited about this new role as a big brother. So for the moment, it feels like very triumphant. He's super excited. When you guys can have me back on after the babies are born, and I can tell you how many days passed until he asked to send them back, which I'm sure will happen right at some point. But for this moment, I feel like it actually has allowed him to be a bit more mature and sort of like it definitely showed me a side of him that like I was very nervous wasn't there in terms of like empathy and caring and interest in being a big brother.
I think that's a very great triumph, and it's very sweet that he was thinking, you know, my concern was like, is he already doing the math? Like, wait, right now all the Christmas presents are for me. So does that mean the next year I'm going to have to split this, you know, bounty up by three? But he's thinking right of making sure that they have Christmas presents. So that's definitely a triumph. I have a present related fail, unfortunately. So last week, Naima and I went to Chicago, where her father and I both grew up, and spent Thanksgiving with our families. And we had a really nice time. The night before Thanksgiving, we went out to dinner. It was myself, my older sister, Amisa, her son, who is 5 months older than my daughter. So they're in the same grade. They're very close, despite living across the country from each other. And my father, if I didn't mention him. So my sister, her kid, my dad, and then my little one's father and her younger brother stopped by toward the end of the meal for a little bit. Had a really nice time at the Medici in Hyde Park, which is one of our favorite restaurants. And my nephew turned 7 November 4th, and I hadn't seen him, of course. So I'd brought his present. So he unwrapped it. It's from our favorite toy store in Hyde Park, Toys Etc. Same place I got all my toys growing up. So it was really nice to go in there and pick him out something. And I got him a magic kit because he's a very, you know, creative, and there's a little budding showman in him, you know. And so it's like, okay, great. He'll learn to do magic and he can do magic shows for family. It'll be so cool. And so I gave it to him and I said, I hope you like it. And then I said, well, I hope you don't already have it. And in that moment, it hit me. And he looked at me and he said, I do. And I said, do you already have it? Because this is what I gave you for your 6th birthday last year. And he said,
oh, no.
It is. And so my sister's like, no, I've never seen this. No, this isn't it. You know, maybe you got him a magic kit last year, but no, it's not the same thing. I've never seen this toy before. And so I said, do you like magic? He said, not really. And so then I'm putting it together. So my dad's cracking up. He's like, yeah, you've never seen it before because he got it and like put it in a corner somewhere and you bought it again. And so we go to their house after dinner and I haven't posted the picture. I have a very cute picture of my daughter and my nephew coming down the stairs, and they're each holding the same magic kit, the 2019 gift and the 2018 birthday present. And my daughter, for a little extra razzle dazzle, is wearing the top hat that came in the magic kit. So, yes, I did buy my nephew the same gift 2 years in a row for his birthday, and I'm so sorry. So now I have to like be completely over the top for Kwanzaa and come up with something that he's really going to like. And I attempted to re-gift the present to my daughter's little brother when he came to the restaurant because he wasn't having he was a little tired, it was a little late, and he was cranky, and he didn't really want to hang out with us. I think he just wanted to be with his dad. So I said, oh, David, I didn't see you for your birthday. I got you this. And I tried to give it to him, and then he got in trouble, so his dad wouldn't let him have it. He was excited at first, and then he didn't get to have it. So I am the owner of a child's magic kit. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Maybe I'm going to just teach myself some tricks.
I'm marking my calendar now for December 1st, 2020, ask Jamila if her nephew liked the magic kit.
It was so cool looking, and there was no sense of deja vu when I purchased it. And now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, it was in the exact same place, because it's a very small toy store. They didn't move it. It's not a new box. It wasn't on sale. It's right where I found it last time. I went to the exact same spot and picked it out again. So, my bad.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, before we move on, let's do some business. Slate's parenting newsletter is the best place to be notified about all of our great parenting content, including Mom and Dad Are Fighting, aka your weekly tally of how much Jamila has messed up at adulthood. Care and Feeding, our parenting advice column, where Jamila, who messes up at adulthood, then attempts to tell other parents how they can be better at their jobs, and so much more. It is also a personal email from Dan every week. It's like your own BFF in your head is there to tell you how to be a more empathetic and kind parent. And it's Dan Qua. And it's... I'm sorry. Oh, I forget that. So we can see each other and you all can't see us. So the video component that you're missing is very enjoyable for me, but you're not getting it. Sorry. But what you can get from us is available at slate.com/parenting email. So you too can have Dan staring you down just electronically. Also, you can find us on Facebook if you want more Dan intimidation. Search Slate Parenting. Maybe he'll let you in the group. Maybe he won't. But it is a very fun community if you can get in. And it's well moderated. So you don't have to worry about anybody making you feel bad if you are among the chosen few that are allowed to participate. Go on Facebook and search Slate Parenting. Also, if you are a Slate Plus member, today we're going to be talking about what you should not say to someone like Catherine, who is expecting twins. Here is a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
One time I was just walking down the street, some people stopped, say, oh, when are you due? And I said, oh, February twins. And this like very large, overweight man was like, oh, well, that explains it. And I'm like,
wow.
Excuse me?
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like,
what a dick.
To hear more great segments like that and to get ad-free versions of your favorite Slate podcast, sign up for Slate Plus. Slate Plus is our membership program, and it's a great way to support the work that we do here. For just $35 for your first year, you can help cover the cost of producing Mom and Dad Are Fighting and your other favorite Slate shows. And, of course, in return, you get extended ad-free versions of this show and other great Slate shows, plus a ton of other great benefits. So if you want to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, please, please, please go to Slate.com/Mom and Dad Plus and join Slate Plus today. All right. Now it's time for listener questions. This particular question was emailed to us. And if you would like to email us a question for consideration, send it to momanddad@slate.com. Today, we've got questions being read by the one and only Sasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, I'm writing to ask for any tips you might have about managing my emotions during visits with my family. My parents live on the other side of the country, so we only see them once or twice a year. Last time we went to their house, it went south fast due to their purchase of a new dog the week before and my discovery of a loaded BB gun in the kids' room. We ended up leaving early to stay with relatives nearby, a decision that they still blame on my wife, despite my repeated assurances that it was my decision. The last time they came to our house, it didn't go much better. The two of them infuriate me for different reasons. My dad, for his hands-off attitude and lack of any attempt to engage with the kids, and my mother, for her poking and prodding, high drama, earned or imagined, and passive-aggressive comments. During a weak moment with a sick wife and crying kids, I snapped at my parents, and they went home, insulted and enraged. How do I keep my cool around my parents? I've made many suggestions to them over the years, including staying at an Airbnb, visiting for shorter periods of time, giving us some quiet time in the evening, etc. But they are both incredibly resistant to change and blame everything on my stress level. Perhaps a heavy dose of CBD is in order next time they're in town.
Well, you're speaking my language, letter writer. Heavy dose of CBD sounds like a very good idea, but I would also recommend pairing it with a little THC, if you know what I mean. Put the drugs in your drugs. I'm sorry that you're going through this. I have experienced moments like this with my own mother. We're very close, but we have at times had a volatile relationship and can be passive aggressive and dramatic and like a working class version of Dynasty on the south side of Chicago. And my daughter gets all into it. So we've learned to control that a bit. I think that having someone stay at an Airbnb, everything that you said, you know, should I do this? You should do, but you should do all of them. So there should be an Airbnb or a hotel. There should be a short visit during the holidays, which is already a stressful time of year on its own without family trouble. There should be some evening time or perhaps morning time that is dedicated to you and your partner and your children being away from your parents. And you may want to use a little CBD or a glass of wine or you know, it could be something you get from the health food store, but just something that helps to address your anxiety. It could be a nice cup of lavender tea when you know you're getting ready to go into a conversation with your parents. Just because your parents live far away and you only really see them at the holidays doesn't mean that you should subject yourself and your family to a situation that's going to create unhappy memories. We have a limited amount of time on this planet ourselves, but, you know, more often than not with our parents. And when we watch them become grandparents, they're in a different time in their lives than they were when they were raising us. And the combination of those things does not always make for happy, seamless times. And perhaps that was the way that you interacted with them, you know, prior to becoming married and becoming a parent. But I don't think that you should feel that this time has to be rich with lots and lots of mom and dad time. Maybe you all do Christmas Eve dinner and brunch on Christmas and that's it. And that's all the time you all need together and that's fine. But I think it's important that you continue to defend yourself and your wife and that you are reasonable and respectful of your family and try to avoid exposing your children to this tension as much as you possibly can, but that this should probably be a pretty short visit. What do you think, Dan?
It's hard to recommend that this be a short visit only because the parents live all the way across the country. Like, you can't fly them out for Christmas and then be like, all right, see you on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and that's it. Like, that's just not practical for most people, as appealing of a solution as that is for parents who do live closer. And I totally agree with you that if the parents are close, I mean, one obvious answer is just like minimize contact more than you're currently doing. Mm. But you have this sort of perfect storm, right? Where you don't see the parents very often, so you don't really have that much time to get acclimated to each other. You're not used to each other in close quarters. You're stuck in these close quarters. The visit means a lot to everyone because it only happens once or twice a year, and it can't really be short. It's hard to make it short. Long-time listeners to this podcast will remember that I have had a number of fails that revolve around my inability to keep my cool around my mom, who is a wonderful, lovely woman who did a great job raising me, but who, for whatever teenage-based reasons, just completely at times gets on my nerves in ways that I'm not proud of at all and that lead me to just behave like a real fucking asshole. To a woman who's now 73 and certainly doesn't deserve that shit, no matter how much she gets on my nerves. And I would like to make the gentle suggestion that the stuff that you are describing your parents doing when they stay at your house is honestly not that bad. I agree that if you go to your parents' house and they just got a new fucking giant dog and didn't tell you, and there's a gun in the kid's room, yes, great idea to not replicate that misadventure.
Yeah.
But if you are bringing your parents to your house for a week, one of the only weeks you're going to see them, I think it is really imperative that you do find a way to calm yourself and not fly off the handle at the stuff you're describing, which to my mind merely reaches the level of annoying and not damaging. It is not damaging that someone just makes passive aggressive comments. It's annoying.
Yeah.
It is not truly damaging that someone, that your dad doesn't pay as much attention to the kids as you want him to. You know what? That is a problem with many grandpas and grandmas all over the world. You just do your best. Now, it's easy for me to say, you just got to do better. You're writing to us asking, how do I do better? And so I actually, like Jamila, think that weed isn't a terrible idea. Yeah. You might also consider giving it to your parents. Yeah. But I also think something that has helped me, and this is like a dumb mind trick, but it has helped me at least build a little bit of empathy in moments where I would otherwise be likely to fly off the handle at little tiny things my mom says or does. It really helps me, this is going to sound so stupid when I say it, to imagine myself at 73 and my beloved children sitting at a table with me, rolling their eyes at what a fucking pain in the ass I have become.
Yeah.
Because I know that will happen. I know I will be that guy. I know the little things I do will drive my children insane. And all I will want from them at that time is to just keep it together and not tell me how much I annoy them. That is all I will want for that holiday. And so that has been a great help for me in recent years in summoning up all of the patience I can muster and applying it to situations where I must state my mom is not doing anything wrong. I'm just being rubbed the wrong way by her for reasons that are now 40 years old. So that's dumb. It's little. And it might also help you to just be reminded from an outside source, there's way worse shit that these people could be doing in your house.
Yeah.
It's great that they're not doing that. So do your best to cut them some slack. Catherine, what do you think?
So I think a lot of good things have been said so far. I would say the word that I want to like to reverberate around this question is the word is boundaries. So I think that part of what's happening is that there's a lot of pressure on these visits because, you know, across the country, once a year, all that stuff. And so in some ways that just makes everything more tense. But I think, you know, the letter writer mentions that his parents are resistant to change, but he can take initiative with setting the terms of how the visits are going to go. So I think, obviously, not staying at the parents' house anymore, I think the BB gun is basically like a never-go-back situation in terms of staying there. So the next time you're visiting, you're saying, like, here are the terms of our visit. We are coming for 5 days, and we're staying with Cousin Nancy. And I also think we don't know the full depth of this relationship, but perhaps there's an opportunity to level with the parents about how past years has not gone well. I think if it's to the point, not just where there's like some eye rolls or a few slammed doors, but people are leaving early, I think everyone recognizes it hasn't gone well. And that's probably also a disappointment for them. I mean, I think that they probably, as Dan says, if you think about it, try to be empathetic to their situation, like that they could be devastated by that, or they could be really disappointed about, you know, whether or not they're right or wrong in their assessments. They may be really disappointed that they're flying across the country and it's going so badly that they're leaving early. So is there an opportunity to try to have an honest conversation with them and say, listen, the last couple visits haven't gone well, and we want to talk to you about some ways that we can make this visit more enjoyable for everyone. And maybe, you know, thinking not just about the things that that annoy them, I think getting out of the same house is really important. I don't know if it's financially feasible, but is there a neutral place that you all could meet, like, you know, somewhere for the holidays that's neither anyone's houses, that, you know, a little vacation or something like that? Of course, that might be a lot more expensive and not optimal, but try to center the conversation around, like, what has gone well in the past. Like, maybe you guys all like to go look at Christmas lights, or maybe you guys like to watch sports or whatever it is, and say, like, these are the moments that we've enjoyed. So, like, let's structure the vacation around doing more of those and take away some of the pain points. So, I can't say how that conversation is going to go, but I think that an acknowledgement and trying to have an honest conversation before you're all in the same house, just replicating the same situation over and over and over again, could be really helpful in trying to basically just, like, level with them like adults about how to make it better in the future.
That's all really great. And talking about what's happened in the past is something that it does sound like this family really needs to do, to grapple with what transpired the last few times that they were together and how that made everyone feel, so that this next visit can be more positive. And before I toss it back to you, Dan, but I have one small caveat. I think I may have assumed that, obviously, the BB gun, that's quite bad. Having people leave early is bad. I think I may have interpreted the behavior of the parents being a little bit worse than it may have been. And when I was listening to Dan talk and how so much it sounds like my own experiences with my 71-year-old mom, and putting yourself in your mother's shoes is really, or in your parents' shoes, is incredibly helpful. And it's something that has saved our relationship. But if you're just talking about run-of-the-mill elder passive aggression, yeah, that's what parents do, buddy. You got to suck that up a little bit, especially if they only live across the, they live all the way on the other side of the country. I'm like, wait, they just got on your nerves? That's what they do. I thought this was, like, really bad. Dan, you wanted to say something.
And it may be that this letter writer was sort of loath to put into words the things that are truly bad or abusive about it.
Yeah.
And in that case, that's different advice, right? That's
right.
A different situation. Catherine, I think you're really, really right about this being an opportunity to talk in a non-judgmental way about some of these past events.
Yep.
And think about them, because of course the parents feel just as upset and worried about this as this letter writer does, right? I think that that's really good advice. There's one other tiny little piece of advice that I would give, which is that one of the things you might consider planning for this holiday season is fill as much of the time as you can, maybe a couple of hours each day if possible, with things that your parents can take your kids out to do. Obviously, it's great to see your parents in general. Sometimes it's terrible because you get on each other's nerves. But, you know, obviously one idea of the visit is that they're seeing you. But the real reason for these visits is for grandparents to connect with grandkids. That is what you as the parents, and honestly probably them as the grandparents, most want out of this event. So create and construct times in which they can do those things together, and you don't even have to fucking be there.
Yes.
You can be
yes.
at home while they take the kids to see Frozen 2, while they go to a museum, while they take them out to dinner or take them to get their nails done or whatever. Like, there are very simple things that your parents can do with your kids, as long as you trust them out in the world with them, which hopefully is the case, that both accomplish what you truly want out of this visit and take some of the pressure off the, like, 24/7 nature of them being in the house with you. So make a bunch of plans for that. That will really help.
That's such a good idea. Yeah.
Definitely. And that made me think the idea of being on neutral territory could also be going to an Airbnb together. You know, like, if you all rent a house for the week as opposed to in your home, I don't know. I just feel like you can retreat to spaces that may be kind of exciting or interesting to be in. So just having a little time to yourself in someone else's bedroom, as opposed to, you know, being in your own space where you may feel trapped or, you know, like, it's tight anyway, even when your parents aren't there. I think there's something to just getting out of your environment or not having that kind of tension or complicated energy in your own home. So happy holidays, letter writer. Hope things work out for you. It is only once or twice a year.
And for all of us.
And for all of us with our parents. Yes, amen and ashe. We received that letter via email. And if you would like to receive some advice from us, you can also send us an email at momanddaditslate.com. Okay, so our second question didn't come in via email. This is from the Facebook group, and it sparked a lot of conversation there. And so we decided to bring it over here.
Dear Mom and Dad are fighting. The parents of three kids in our neighborhood went to Aruba for a week and left their 16-year-old daughter in charge of their 12 and 9-year-old. This is the second time they've done this. I offered to help watch the young ones after school a few times, but I'm worried about safety. Should I call the police? For context, I work in a school, so I'm a mandatory reporter. If I saw this happening to a child at work, I'd have to report the parents.
Okay. This question did spark a lot of conversation on the Facebook group, and I will start off our conversation with the exact same thing I posted in that Facebook group, which is, you should not call the police. Yeah. Do not call the police under this circumstance. In general, you should really limit the number of circumstances under which you might call the police. I know that that's tricky when you're a mandatory reporter, but nonetheless, this is not a circumstance for calling the police. I also think that even if you think that 16 is too young to take care of these children, which I don't necessarily, I still think there's an argument to be made for not calling the police, which is almost certainly going to not make this situation better in any way for anyone involved in it.
At all.
So that's the first part of this, and I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about that. But let's move before that to the second part of this question, which is the larger question, which is it okay in the grander, not do I call the police sense, but the is this good parenting sense, to go to Aruba for a week and leave your 16-year-old in charge of a 12 and 9-year-old? And my inclination is to say that it very well could be that there were circumstances when I was 16 and taking care of myself for long periods of time where I was totally fine. There are plenty of 16-year-olds out in the world who have their own children and take care of them just fine all the time. And that to like judge from the outside without any evidence that like things are going awry or the house is on a fire or the kids are walking around without pants or something, that this is negligent is, I think, putting too much stock in your understanding of how a family should be and not in this family's actual experience. I think it does not seem completely bananas to think that a 16-year-old could take care of these kids. Now, I'll say that often when these things come up, it's because a parent has to work or a parent is in jail or has some kind of other possibly socioeconomically derived problem that forces a 16-year-old into the situation. Mm-hmm. Not that the parents went to Aruba, but I mean, good for them. Jamila, what do you think?
I did go and read some of the Facebook discussion about this, and you raised, as did other folks, a really good point that there are 16-year-olds who are parents and parent effectively and do so every day. There are also a lot of 16-year-olds who are primary caregivers to children for a number of other reasons. Like you said, somebody could be incarcerated, parents that work overnight, and so the little one, you know, the medium one goes and picks up the little one from school and the big one's cooking dinner. No, you don't need to call the fucking police. Are you serious? No, please don't. Please. That is a trigger that you pull. And I'm you know, double entendre, I suppose, only when absolutely necessary. And so unless you feel that there's a particular danger that this child has invited into the home, maybe they've had some other people coming in and out. I also would hope that if you felt comfortable enough to intervene in this way, that you would have contact info for those parents. I'd also would hope that while they're in Aruba, that they are accessible and that they would have a direct line from the adult that is physically closest to their child while they're gone. So if there was something that you saw that raised a red flag, you should be able to reach the parents, or you should, you know, hopefully be in a position to say something to the kid like, hey, I noticed you've been ordering pizza. How about we coordinate that so you don't have a stranger coming to your house when there's no one else there, you know, or even talking to the parents about that. Like, okay, I see, you know, the teenage daughter's using Seamless and Grubhub. Would you be cool with maybe directing delivery to me and I could just walk the food over so that way you don't have to worry about somebody casing the joint and noticing that you all are off suntanning your perineum somewhere while your big kid is raising your small children. Now, as Dan so eloquently laid it out, the other question that we have is this good parenting? Is it for you, Facebook friend of the show and Slate Parenting, to say that this is good parenting in that home? I agree with Dan. We don't know what goes on in their home. So we can only hope for the best. Keep an eye out. Be prepared to offer support if needed. As for me and my home, I'm filing this under white folks madness, just like the time Dan said it was okay to let your kid backpack through Europe without a cell phone or whatever, what was some cool group or something. I don't know. I just remember thinking like, yep, not, nope, not for me and not for my. And it's so funny because I have a couple of girlfriends who listen to the show. Hi, Patricia. Hi, Carmen. And there's another sister whose name is Casey, who've reached out on separate occasions to be like, I'm so glad that you're there, because there are moments where there's some permissiveness that culturally, as Black women, we're like, nope. You know, if you think of Black motherhood as being different from the ways that other cultures parent, don't think of it as being the screaming, spanking, prison warden like depictions you see in the media. But do, if you take anything from us and how we love and nurture, please take our sense of caution and good sense. Being risk adverse is not always the worst thing to be. I cannot fathom raising, no matter how mature and responsible my children are, and if I become a parent of multiple people at some point, I hope that I can say that of them. I think the one I have right now is doing pretty okay for six. I can't think of a 16-year-old that I would feel comfortable. I've known phenomenal 16-year-olds. I was just okay at 16, but I've never met a 16-year-old that I would want to leave with a 12 and a 9-year-old so that I could go to Aruba. You know, if this were a matter of grandma's sick, something has happened, you know, I have to be gone for a night or I have to go to work and I need you to stay here. That's one thing. But to go off and do that, to me, just seems anything could happen at any time. Your kid's school could get shut up and you're gone and you're in Aruba and there's nobody there to support them through that. They could witness a car accident on the way home. You know what I mean? It just seems like you're inviting things that are not the norm, that don't happen every day, but you're inviting the potential for your children to be in need of real adult support that they don't have. And so I think it's great to take vacations. I think it's great to be away from your children, but I think that's a lot of pressure for a 16-year-old to have to deal with. And I think that the two younger children, maybe you feel comfortable leaving a 16-year-old for a week. But those two little ones, I think, really need to have a grown-up who is present, because this isn't a 16-year-old parent. It'd be one thing if you had a relative who was a 16-year-old parent, right, who's used to caring for children alone, and you said, can you come watch these kids for a week? Or, you know, a 16-year-old parent is not the same as a 16-year-old who has two full-time parents who live in the house in terms of maturity and what they're used to having to deal with. That's just how I feel about it. Catherine, what do you think?
So one really interesting thing that's coming up in this conversation and that I noticed on the Facebook page as well is how we view the context of the parents going to Aruba. That the sense that they're going on a vacation is somehow placing the children in more danger than if they were called away for a family emergency. So, I think that actually speaks to how we judge other parents. And there's actually some really interesting studies that they like ask people to judge whether or not it's safe to leave a kid in the car for a certain amount of time. And people, for example, judge mothers much more harshly for doing that than fathers. The reason they're doing it as being more or less dangerous. So the reason that they're leaving doesn't actually influence like whether or not the kids are in danger. Like the amount of danger is basically the same. But it definitely informs like how we judge them as parents. So I think that's something to like think about a little bit. I mean, I just feel even if this was at their school, this would not be something that required mandatory reporting. We don't know who's checking up on these kids. We don't know what kind of local contacts they have. Maybe that's not a choice that some of us would make. But the concern about this, I think, also just speaks to where we are as a helicopter parenting hypervigilant culture. I think this wouldn't even be like something that people batted an eyelash at in the 1970s, I would say, probably. So I think that the concern around this, I think, is much more about how we judge parents than actual danger and risk.
That's interesting.
Those studies that you're referring to, Catherine, are really interesting. I remember that people judge parents significantly more harshly if they're told that they are leaving a kid in a car to go to a doctor's appointment than they do if they're leaving a kid in a car to go shopping, than they do if they're leaving a kid in a car to go have an affair.
Yes.
The scale of how people get judged, as you say, has everything to do with our beliefs about what the responsibilities of parents are. And I think it's very tied up with this very human notion that we judge behavior based on how would we feel if the worst thing happened? Mm-hmm. Would you be able to live with yourself right. if the worst thing happened when you're thinking of the ways that you're doing mm-hmm. it, right? There's this vision of the future we have in which we see something terrible happening to those kids and the parents coming home from Aruba and feeling just awful about what they'd done in a way that they wouldn't feel if they were taking care of a sick relative
exactly.
or at work and they were, you know, quote unquote, forced into this scenario.
Right.
And that does really impact how we judge people and consider these situations. All that is true. And I also, as I said, feel like you should not judge this family or make assumptions about this family and how it's working. All that is true. And I can also say I would also never go to Aruba and leave, you know, Lyra at 16 and Harper at 14 home by themselves, because that reaches the level to me where I also would not be able to live with myself if something really shitty happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know why exactly, why that like guilt crops up in a way it didn't with, for example, the kid going overseas, where I viewed that as, even though there are like measurably greater risks potentially, I just thought that was worth it. And it didn't yeah. bother me even a tiny bit. But one thing that I would like to point out, and I hope this Facebook, I mean, this was a week ago, so hopefully these people are back from Aruba and the kids are fine. But I hope this Facebook poster bears in mind is this is the second time they've done this. So like the first time it went okay, right? I mean, seemed like didn't cause the kids to hate the parents or anything to go wrong or the house to burn down then. So like there's evidence that maybe this is, in fact, empirically totally fine. But Catherine, would you ever do this?
I mean, right now I'm thinking about newborns. So I just like it's like hard for me to imagine even having teenagers who can like be at home by themselves. I don't know. By that point, you know, I'm going to have three kids and I'm going to want to go to Aruba. So who knows what I'll be thinking by the time my oldest is 16.
That's very true.
So we could have an 18-year-old and 14-year-olds. Like, you know, what could go wrong with one 18-year-old and then two 14-year-olds? Like, obviously, that's just...
Sounds golden.
Yeah, sounds like party at our house.
Sounds like a very fun party. Well, Facebook friend, I just hope that you're, I don't want to say that you hopped to the police thing, but that thing in you that said, maybe, you know, should I call the police? I hope that that is simply tied to you being a mandated reporter. And I've been one before and it's stressful and I understand, but that isn't your approach to your neighbors in general, because that could take a whole lot of twists and turns. And, yeah, you haven't seen any smoke coming out of the house. You haven't seen any teenage boys riding up on motorcycles with leather jackets looking like a young Jason Priestley or Luke Perry. I think you'll be fine. I think they'll be fine. And that the parents are incredibly selfish. But whatever, it's cool. Do whatever you want. Thank you for sharing your conundrum. And if you want us to discuss your parenting questions in a public forum, you can share it on the Facebook group as well. Go to Facebook and search Slate Parenting. Just be prepared for a whole lot of feedback, perhaps more feedback than you may want, and the possibility that we'll read the question on the show, which I think has typically been a pretty positive experience for folks who've shared their inner feelings about parenting with us. Their deepest insecurities, we just put it on our podcast. And if you want to make it more likely that we take your question and read it to our thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners across the world, send us an email at momanddad@slate.com. www.thebestofmeshow.com. Before we get out of here, we're going to make some recommendations. So, Catherine, what do you have for us? What are you recommending this week?
I would like to revive a recommendation from the wonderful Gabriel Roth, who I believe I co-hosted with him a couple years ago, and he made a recommendation for Shrinky Dinks. So for those who do not know, Shrinky Dinks are these little plastic things. You color them in, you put them in the oven, you watch them shrink. And I think when he recommended them, his kids were around my son's age, like preschoolish age. And I tried them for my son when my son was like 2 or 2.5. And it was okay, but like he wasn't so into it. We recently did them with some friends over Thanksgiving, and they were just like a huge hit. They are so good for the preschool, probably preschool to, you know, very early elementary set. And this is just like, you know, I think a lot of us are staring down really long school holidays coming up where there's going to be bad weather. There's going to be things, you know, days where we don't have a lot planned. This is just like a really great craft activity. I'm not one of these people that, like, you know, wants to get out the 17-step craft projects. Like, this is just super easy. Basically, any kid who can hold a pencil can do it. And I just think, like, Shrinky Dinks can just help a lot of parents get through those 2.5-week-long school breaks.
Cool.
It's a great recommendation, Gabe. We miss you. Shrinky Dinks really are perfect for when you're just like, I have got to find a way to kill an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Or they're a perfect hour-and-a-half time killer. Yeah. I'm recommending today a book for adults, not for kids. It is called That Was Awkward. It is by the New Yorker cartoonist Emily Flake. It's a very simple book. It is a taxonomy of awkward hugs. Very, very funny. It just goes through every kind of awkward hug you could ever have with anyone, with family members, with ex-romantic partners, with people at work. When Jamila and I met in Miami, we avoided the awkward hug because Jamila made the very smart move to be wearing a swimsuit when we first ran into each other. So there was like, no, we're not going to do any kind of hug. It was perfect. It was an ace move, Jamila.
I think I was the only person at the Miami Book Fair who actually wore a bathing suit at any point. And I wore it for most of the book fair.
That is Miami
Best
life.
You took better advantage of that environment than anyone else. It's by Emily Flake. It's called That Was Awkward. Get it as a gift for whoever the last person is that you tried to air kiss, but then you misjudged which side to start on and you bonked your foreheads against each other. It's great. Jamila, what about you?
I love that. That whole book could just be made of interactions that I've had in the past like 6 months. So this week I am recommending matching outfits with your kids. And my daughter Naima is 6.5. I'll admit, I didn't do it from like day one. I think she was about a year old. And there were times like I'd coordinate, like, oh, you have them pink on, I have them pink. Then one day I was like, wait, I have a mini me. I have an actual mini me. This is great. I will only have a limited amount of time to decide what she looks like every single day. Why don't we look the same? But now that, you know, she's old enough to participate in picking out her clothes and is taking a greater interest in doing that, she still enjoys dressing alike. And I'll say, do you want to match today or do you want to do your own thing? Sometimes she'll say, oh, I want to do my own thing. But more often than that, when I say it, you know, she'll say, yeah, let's match. And we have things that like actually match. Like we have these matching cool furry boots because we saw another mother and daughter wearing them and looked at each other. And it was literally like we had felt threatened. Like, oh, no, they did not come in here with these cute furry boots. Why don't we have these cute furry boots? No one said it, but we thought it. And like within a month, we've got the furry boots. And we're not biters like that, but they're very cute. So we needed them. And when we travel, we may wear, you know, coordinated sweatsuits or whatever. And then like when we go to folks' houses for the holiday, I don't know. It's just our thing. And of course, this time of year, especially those of you all that are in larger families, there's the matching Christmas pajamas and ugly sweaters and Hanukkah gear and kufis and dashikis and the same print for Kwanzaa and all that stuff. And it's just so cute and sweet and fun. And I know that at some point, probably sooner than I'd imagine, my daughter is going to be too cool, too independent, too grown to do this with me. So if your child is still small enough for this simple joy that you can get in wearing matching outfits and being that corny and lame, I encourage you to take advantage of it because it is really a lot of fun.
I love it. That's such a great recommendation.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us, Catherine. That is our show for the week. If you have a question that you'd like to hear on air, leave us a message old school style at 424-255-7833 or send us an email at momanddadatslate.com or, of course, join us on Facebook by searching for Slate Parenting. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Dan Coist and Catherine Goldstein, I'm Jamila Lemieux.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.